All right, welcome to Take Back, the Universe Loves to Laugh, here at Penguin Radio, 102.3 FM or worldwide, radio.dominican.edu. I'm your host, Barbara McVeigh. Hey, we got big things to talk about here on Take Back, and we have an agenda. As our planet faces global climate change, melting polar ice caps, and ocean acidification, we like to remain positive. There's hope. We're still alive. Here at Take Back, we plan to get deep into understanding these issues and what we can do about them. And what does it mean to be human? So my first big question is this. If we are dealing with such big global environmental problems, a direct result of our behaviors, isn't it a good time to ask what we are being taught and what we are teaching? Maybe we don't have it right. Each Tuesday at noon here on Take Back, we will have thinkers, poets, writers, educators, musicians, and environmentalists help us get it right and navigate this crazy journey called life. Maybe we'll get inspired to make some big changes, and we'll have fun and laugh too. So today on Take Back, we have a very special guest, José Pérez de Almeida Neto. Many call him a Brazilian guitarist, and still he's much more than that. He's a composer, arranger, producer, writer, and has worked and supported many well-recognized names in the music world, including Harry Belafonte, Steve Winwood, Brazilian artists Philo Machado, Ayrto Moreira, and Flora Purim, among others. His own band, Neto Band, has been together for over 25 years, and were a regular at the legendary jazz club Ronnie Scott's in London for many years. In fact, in 1996, the London Times writes, "As soon as he touched his custom guitar, sending a shower of harmonics into the silence, he rendered all musings about categorization redundant. He demonstrated just how much musical territory opened up by Hendrix in the 1960s still remains for subsequent generations of guitarists to explore." Welcome, José Neto, to Take Back.
Thank you, Barbara, and nice to be here live with you all there listening at the Dominican University Radio. And yeah, let's talk for a little while. Thanks for having me.
And we're definitely going to listen to some music as well.
Yeah, that would be great.
Can't get around that one.
No.
Well, I mean, you have led a pretty legacy musical life. I mean, not only have you played with some of the top artists and well-recognized names, but you've really maintained your own work as well. Tell us a little bit about your story.
I from the beginning of you know, learning guitar, learning music, playing, back in Brazil, back in São Paulo with the family, I always liked to learn songs. You know, it was all a variety of anything we listen on the radio, from Beatles to Brazilian music. But I also always like to write and explore that you know, freedom of just, you know, you learn a few chords, you learn some licks or scales, and then you start putting things together to, you know, to be original. And I like that because it kind of takes me to somewhere unknown that is pretty much the moment. So through that, I went, you know, and study and different teachers, different schools back in São Paulo, and, extending to classical music, to jazz, to rock, to anything. You know, I like pretty much playing all styles, and came to United States back in 1978, and to New York, and still kind of here now, spending a little more time in Brazil, but still, between here and Europe, and so music really expanded, and playing with different, been very fortunate to play with great musicians and learn and dedicate myself to their music as well, and to make it them sounding the best I could possibly do. but I was concentrating in writing, having a band, and doing my own.
So you went to New York in the late 70s. What drew you to New York?
Well, music, you know, kind of, I went and checked out the Berklee School of Music for a little bit. Was a way of coming out of São Paulo with, you know, a temporary visa at least. And, but stayed there very little and moved to New York and just, you know, try to expand musically and you know, get to another level of, and, you know, I was listening to all the players, a lot of jazz players back then, and New York was just the center of all of that intensity of music and life, you know. So it was very exciting.
I can imagine. And a lot's changed probably since then and now.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it was back in the village, a lot of clubs, you know, back then, you know, Village Gates, Sweet Basil, 7th Avenue South, the Brecker Brothers had a club. And, you know, we were playing those clubs. So Village Gate, I did the Village Gate with Herbie Mann. Mm-hmm. A few nights, which was great. He was very, very free. I remember no rehearsal. I just showed up, and he said, "No, just come and we'll pick some songs and we play." And we did, and we even did some duets, you know, that night. And then I jammed with the band. And 7th Avenue South, we used to do it with the great Jorge Dalto, piano player from Argentina, master piano player, worked with Tito Puentes, George Benson back in the, you know, George Benson when he really came out with, and that is the famous This Masquerade piano solo, that was Jorge Dalto, and that song was, you know, big hit for George. Anyways, it was playing with all these people that, you know, really another level of, for me, I was young, 24, 25 years old back then. Just that push, you know, that you gotta make it happen and you just go for it. And that gives you more confidence. And the more you do it, the more you get into that level, into that zone, you know? And so New York was really, really, really important.
And you played with Harry Belafonte, and that was about the same time that
Well, that was 79. Mm-hmm. It was an audition, and musicians, the drummer, a great Brazilian drummer, is still in New York, Portinho, and then a great percussionist, Steve Thornton, that, you know, after that he went on with Miles Davis, and I think now he's in Malaysia. I see kind of Facebook, I see him kind of in and out these days, but I haven't seen Thornton in a little while. But they put my name down for this audition, and I got a call from John Cartwright, which was the manager for Harry back then. I believe John now is in LA. I haven't seen John also in years, but and I got this call. Hey, you know, can you wanna come in and check it out, try it out, and I said sure, and I just showed up with my guitar and the studio on 38th Street, and big, and then a lot of, you know, it was a large band then. It was I don't know, 10 piece, and even more, 12 pieces. Anyway, the musicians were there, the singers weren't there. You know, usually he had two ladies and two guys, you know, doing the choir. And I showed up, and you know, I knew Portinho and Steve, but had no idea there was another guitar player, Dan Carrillo, great guitar player, and now he's teaching in one of the big schools in New York. Turned out to be a big, big teacher. And, you know, it just, Harry is very kind of, loves that impact drummer and really challenge you right away. He's that kind of intense guy. And they just put me in the middle of the room and said, play for us, right? I said, well, yeah, there's nothing wrong with that. So they plugged me in and I played. I played a few things. I think I played, you know, a couple of, I don't even know, remember what I played, but I played some of my things and I went into something else. And then they said, oh, good, so play something with the band. And I remember Richard Cummings was the musical director. And Richard said, hey, you know, okay, so here's the chart. And I said, well, now, you know, I'm not going to, don't need the chart. I think I'll just follow you guys because, you know, we are just jamming anyways. I'm not. So that's, you know, and I start playing and jamming. And, you know, in Brazil, it's something you learn, you know, in the nightclubs, and you play with different guys, and the last guy I was playing in, it was Filó in Brazil, and just, you know, a guy, amazing genius, and he just goes from song to song, from, so you just kind of using your ears and going and practicing that reflex of learning at the moment the best you can and following and you know, hopefully playing the right notes and following. So that's what I did, and they liked it. They liked that style. You know, I was kind of, it was, since it was two guitar players, I was just kind of complimenting and you know, finding my space, respecting what, you know, and so I went home that day. Nobody said anything. I mean, it seemed like it was okay, but you really don't know. There's auditions things, you know. I'm sure they were auditioning other guitar players as well. So I went home, and a couple of days went by, and I got another call. They said, hey, you know, we're still looking. Would you come back? And I said, sure, I'll come back. And then so I went back and played a little bit longer. That time, played for you know, I was there a couple of hours. Harry wasn't there, but Richard and all the musicians were there. And then I got a little deeper into it, you know, a couple of songs, and they gave me some parts. I had to kind of learn a few things and show a little more. And then I went home and couple of days, then I got a call and said, hey, you want to come in? Harry would like to talk to you. So that's when Harry kind of hired me.
He kind of hired you. So you're a 23, 24-year-old young guy from Brazil, in New York. And
a little older than then, you know, that. So I was about 26 then.
And what's really amazing about Harry Belafonte, and a lot of people may not recognize this so much today, the younger generation, the older generation knows, but he was an incredible social changer in the United States and beyond. I mean, in South Africa, the United States for the civil rights movement, apartheid in South Africa. So you just stepped into an arena of musicians who...
Yeah, very, very involved and musically, you know, really breaking. I mean, world music, he was, you know, one of the first American musicians to touch that diversity of Africa and the islands and very, very perfectionist. You know, rehearsals were intense and really a lot of I mean, the music rhythmically, he loves to dance, and he's a performer, so the rhythms, but very complex little parts and changes and you get a song like Banana Boat or one of his great hits like Matilda, and we would just put all kinds of things in there. Everyone that I was a music, after a while that I was with him, I became musical director. Richard Cummings left, and then I took over for, 10 years or so. I end up doing all these rearrangements for all the songs, so all the influences, and then he wanted something a little more Brazilian, and then, somebody from Africa came, so it, you get the African, and then somebody from Jamaica, from Trinidad. We had Angus Nunes, bass player, Toby, drummer from Trinidad, and so it was amazing. It was like, great influences and different people, different races, different countries, languages,
and really all coming together through music.
It was about our music. And then we would travel together. Back then it was really extended tours. He was really active. And just a great, great school of life and music and arts. He's probably one of the greatest performers, of all times.
Surely.
Yeah.
And he used that as a platform for doing incredible things, globally.
Yeah, yeah.
And to be a part of that, it must have been an incredible.
Yeah. Amazing experience.
Where did you go from there?
Well, then from Harry, I left New York around 82, 83, and then kept coming back. But coming to Marin County back then, I start kind of getting back to my original stuff, playing, writing, and put a few bands together here, start playing some of the local clubs, there was, back then there was Uncle Charlie's in Corte Madeira, there was a few things, and then Tania Maria called me to do a big album for her, Come With Me, it was called. And that played a lot, especially here in the Bay Area. And we did the Great American Music Hall 4 nights. And I was kind of featured with her. Didn't continue. They went on to Paris for a while, and I didn't want to have to kind of move. Spent 2 months in Paris, and Pablo was just born.
Pablo is your son.
My son, and I just decided to stay. So that kind of ended there. That musical situation. Saw her many times after, and then but then staying around here in 85. Harry got me back. He was doing stuff for HBO, so I got back to Harry. But then 85, I met Flora Purim and Ayrto Moreira. And that started there, an intense relationship. And then in 86, I got this call from a label in Santa Barbara, Water Lily Acoustics, that wanted me to do a solo record. Which became my first record. And it's called Mountains and the Sea. It was recorded in a live, all live. They were audiophile, so they wanted everything live. No processing, no editing.
Old school.
old school, like two microphones inside of a church, beautiful Mount Carmel Church in Montecito.
Which is a beautiful church, beautiful, I mean, historic church. Beautiful. Yeah.
Amazing. And, you know, we would get to, I think he kind of cut some kind of deal with the priest and then the church that we would come in like late at night, like 10 at night. I think we had two nights to do that. Because sometimes, you know, we would be playing and if a car drove by, that was it. Had to stop and start the song again because you could hear in the back of it. So that record got me writing, and I was, you know, was living here in San Anselmo and wrote, you know, I don't know, there was 9 songs or 10 in the record. And those songs kind of progressed into the work with Ayrton in Florida. He, Cavi Alexander was the producer, and it was another American man. He's from India, and Kring was an American man. It was their label. And they got Ayrton to play one song and Flora to sing one song on the record. And through that, those songs evolved into Ayrton collaboration and Flora collaboration. And we started, you know, I started really working for them. Arranging, writing, we did many records.
And Ayrton Moreira and Flora Purim, I mean, they're quite legacy in Brazil as well.
They are. You know, I mean, I was listening to them in Brazil, you know, early 70s, I had all the records. We all, you know, we had our band in São Paulo, Plateau, mm-hmm. which was an instrumental, great band. You know, it started in 73, 74, and we were listening to what they were doing here, you know, and you know, great music.
I'm wondering if we should listen to a song.
Sure. Let's maybe we'll listen to a song from that Mountains in the Sea, from that record in Santa Barbara.
So we have Lua Flora.
Yeah, Lua Flora, which is a song that I named for my daughter, Lua Flora. And this song is actually, has a long life because Ayrton just recorded this song with the lyrics that Flora Purim wrote, and it's going to come out in Ayrton's new record for a Brazilian label, Sesc.
This year
is
big
record.
And this one that we're about to listen to, this was recorded back in 1986?
86, the original, yes.
1986. Okay, well, let's listen, and then we'll come back and talk some more.
Great.
Hold on, we're back. We're having a little technical difficulty. We'll get back to that in just a moment. I saw a performance of you with Ayrton and Flora with the Boston Pop Symphony.
Right. Yes, that was a percussionist for the Boston Pops saw us, Fourth World, playing in Boston. He got very inspired with the band and Ayrton's work, and he wrote a half hour piece of percussion and the orchestra for Ayrton, and invited me to kind of, you know, be there with Ayrton and kind of create the bridge between Ayrton and the orchestra. So it was a, you know, great show. 3 nights actually at the Boston Pops Philharmonic.
Nice.
Okay, I think
we're ready.
Ready for
Lua. All right, here we go. Lua Flora, written and composed by José Neto, recorded in 1986 in Santa Barbara. It's a gorgeous piece. We are here at Penguin Radio, 102.3 FM, San Rafael, and worldwide at radio.dominican.edu. We're here with José Neto, Brazilian guitarist, writer, arranger, composer, performer, and talking to him about his life, his musical life, and more. He stepped away. He'll be right back. And just wanted to say how grateful we are to have him here with us. He's got a lot more to share. We want to hear how he left or joined Fourth World with Laura, with Flora Purim, yeah, and Ayrton Moreira.
Okay. Well, you see, I think 85, I did the first record with a couple of songs I did. Humble People with Ear to and Flora. And then 87, I got really involved to another record that was called The Sun Is Out. That was all for Concord Records. And that one, I really put a lot of work with Ayrton and Flora, and we arranged, we co-wrote. We went out on tour for a little, but then in 89, Ayrton and Flora contacted me and said, listen, we want to go on tour to Europe. They had 3 weeks in Austria, and we going just in trio, just the two of us and you. Right, so that was really challenging, right? So I went playing an acoustic guitar, a Takamine, a really good back, you know, I still have that guitar. I used to play in this amazing setup that was like drums and percussion together, and Flora singing and playing a little bit of a hand percussion. So it was intense work. You know, Ayrton and I, we were like, we would end the show, we would be sweating and working hard. Great, but, and we did, we were opening for that band called Oregon, which was a great band with, I think it's Ralph Towner and Trilok Gurtu, the amazing Indian percussionist was in it, that band then, and Paul McCandless, I think he lives here in the Bay Area somewhere. So we did that tour in Austria, and we were playing in Vienna, and there was another band in town with Alphonse Mouzon, a great drummer. Back in the fusion days, he had a lot of work with Larry Coryell and, you know, great musicians. And the saxophone player that was with them, Gary Meek, came to this show because he was in town, was a night off, Gary Meek from Los Angeles, and saw the show and said, wow, really like what you guys doing. It's just, you know, the three of you and amazing, and let me know if you need one more guy.
He was offering himself, it sounds like.
So you know, they made that connection because Ayrton Flora lived in Santa Barbara, Gary was in LA, I was here in a Bay Area. So then I hear to call me and say, listen, maybe we'll open up for one more with Gary and let come to Santa Barbara and let's get a week and just work on the stuff. And so that's when we put all together, I don't know, four or five of my songs, some of Ayrton's, some of Flora's, and Gary, and that became Fourth World. And then, you know, we kind of started looking for a name. When we went to Vienna, to Austria, it was called Acoustic Magic. It was really a magic, because it was crazy. And then became Fourth World.
And Fourth World has a really strong connection to the Hopi, to indigenous way of... Right. It's the world beyond material world. It's a very has a very spiritual connection.
Yeah. Ayrton is a very spiritual, always been connected to natives, Brazilian natives, American natives, and there was a part of the show that he really expressed that, doing chantings and. Yeah, so that's how Fourth World. And then Ayrton and Flora had this connection with Ronnie Scott's in London, which they, there's an interesting story. The first time they went, it was with Chick Corea in Returns Forever, which is, you know, classic, legendary band. And everybody used to come, Paul McCartney, and Flora always told me, yeah, you know, back in the 70s, early 70s, when we used to come with Chick and yeah. Paul McCartney would come and all the guys to listen to, and then, you know, which was Ayrton Moreira, Stanley Clark, Chick Corea, Florida, and Joe Farrell.
Chick Corea has connections to this university too. I know he's been here.
Yeah. So we start going to Ronnie Scott's, and that's when really became like a fan base, and everybody used to come and you know, packed every night, and it was great times of music and development for me, because we were playing a lot of my original music in collaboration. And that's when I actually got introduced to the guitar that I play now, the Paradis, made by Ralph Spuller in Switzerland. And 1990, I start, you know, playing with that guitar, which really suit the band, because it was, you know, I could do the sub bass, cover some of the bass. It has a sub bass device, and I could put pedals and express a lot with it. And well, so that's Fourth World, and that went through a long time, you know, through the 90s and early 2000s, and all the way to 2000, and still with Harry Belafonte, which you know, I had to even get a sub for Harry, and we played in New York one night, and I called Harry and said, hey, can you come and listen to us? And we were playing at SUBs, and he said, hey, I just arrived from the airport, so put my name down. I'm going to take a shower and I'll come. I said, great. So he came, him and Richard Gere was there.
Richard Gere.
They both sitting on the very first table right in front. And he loved the band. And then that night, I remember he came to Ayrton and said, you are the guy that is stealing my guitar player. he came backstage, and then he saw that it was for real, that really I needed to step away a little bit. And so I got my great brother friend Jay McGeehan, that had worked with Harry back in 79, and he started subbing. So when you know, there was a conflict with Fourth World, Jay McGeehan would come and play. And And I don't think Harry Belafonte ever had a sub. But he told me, I'd rather have you than not to have you.
Wow.
Have you when I can than not to have you. And I said, okay, great. So that was special of him.
The way you share these stories, it sounds like such a tight-knit family, like a musical family, that something special you were all sharing. I mean, not only were you guys the top, such rich musicians, but there's a sense of magic about it when you talk about these names and your experiences.
You spend so much time together in different situations. You talk about your families. You talk about, you know, situations that you're going through, and, you know, you out there on the road somewhere, and, you know, everyone has got kids. They have families and wives, and you stop. You know, you start helping each other, understanding each other's, you know, lives and sharing. And I guess, you know, people like Ayrton and Flora and Harry, and it just became my family, you know. We still talk and visit and play music, but if not, we get together for meals and for just sitting and talking and remembering things, And a year to now is, you know, there's a whole different, a new, you know, new thing going on in Brazil. He's come back to Brazil, and I arranged his new record. And yeah, you know, we have two songs together, including Lua Flora. And so you know,
it's not stopping.
It's not, no, it doesn't seem like it was.
It's almost getting richer. I mean, not only now you have these great youth experiences and stories to share, but now you guys are all older. You've been through a lot. Yeah, I mean, yeah. Not only in your own musical lives, but also just through the course of the history of the last 30 some odd years.
Yeah,
and the changes that have endured. Yeah.
I just saw it and on Facebook that I year to just receive a jazz a legend award in San Luis Obispo at a jazz festival.
Wow.
And I saw a picture of him with the award and looking really good. So it's really, really great to, you know, to see. And I mean, and you know, it's just real musicians trying to, you know, we're still trying to play to serve the music, serve, you know, play for the public, play for spirits, play for us.
So we're the lucky ones.
Yeah, well,
we're all benefiting from this deal.
And we are the lucky ones too to still be able to do it. You know, something that we chose and something, you know, that we've been dedicating all these years to it.
Right. Right. And Flora and I are to have a new book out. Is it in English? I know it's in Portuguese.
Italian.
Italian.
Yeah, all I right. saw that. And it's called Free Spirit.
Free Spirit.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll just have to wait for the translation.
Yeah, but I think it's the writer contacted me, and I'm really curious to look at it. But
yeah.
I think it's the first print, and I think it's in Italian. I'm sure it's going to be in Portuguese and English as well.
We'll be waiting for that.
Oh yeah, yeah. We're gonna know some stories there.
Oh, and then you're still writing and performing. And what's up with your latest work?
Well, you know, from there, you know, like in 2000 and through that late 90s, I started getting in touch with Steve Winwood, which through Ronnie Scott's. He used to come to Ronnie's and he came and saw us, and then he heard the Natto Band, and you know, the Natto Band started going to Ronnie's back around 94, 95, you know, after so many years with Fourth World, and Pete King, which was the manager and owner of the club, and Ronnie's, asked me to come solo with the Natto Band, and that's when we started. So Steve got involved, and I pursued that connection and end up collaborating with him in 2001, 2002. I recorded on his record 97, Narada Michael Walden, a local producer, amazing musician, was producing Steve, and I recorded one song then and continue. So 2002, we got into this collaboration for Steve's new project, which was like a organ, Hammond organ, bass trio, guitar, drums, and him on the organ. And that led into us collaborating nine songs. It was recorded, the first was About Time, 2003. Which we collaborated three songs, including Sylvia, a song that even got picked to be played on a TV series, Crossing Jordan, back in 2003 when it was released. And I'm still doing it. I'm still with Steve. We went on and did 2008. Another record, that one we had six songs, and Eric Clapton got involved. We got to perform with him, and then Steve went on with Eric, and so lots going on. And the Natto Band always going, and Ayrton's always something. So it's, you know, I'm still doing this whole the whole thing that, you know, which is good. I can maintain with these people and you know, really creative energy around this.
And really positive, it sounds.
Positive, and you know, it's good work. You know, Steve's just an amazing musician, player, and a great personality, and a great boss. You know, somebody. So I've been fortunate to work for really good musicians and good people. You know.
You've been living the life.
Well, yeah, but you know. Like my son said the other day that, everybody thought we were rich, but we were shopping at Goodwill.
so struggles along the way.
Well, you know, it's all good. I have nothing to complain, but, you know, I'm more of an instrumentalist. So, you know, and I'm very, very fortunate and happy to play for other people, as long as people that I have a connection musically and so I always like to, through my career, I always had somebody that I worked, you know, of course, to earn, you know, money, but selective to who musically and artistry of that situation, you know, because then you start doing too many things and you get divided and so I was fortunate to have this people that I always, you know, hang and played and develop and you know, for example, Steve, that now is 17 years, I really understand his music and he understands my music, he understands, so we really develop, you know, to perfection his book. You know, right. Which it comes from Traffic, from Blind Faith, from his solo work. And I was, you know, able to collaborate into it and still doing, you know, with Netto Band. We just finished a new record, and which is not out yet. It is done, but I want to release it in vinyl. It's my
and vinyl.
Yes, I wanna get into that market, you know.
And that market's really emerging again. It's pretty beautiful to see.
I mean, I have you know, all the other CDs and downloads, and it's great. You know, you can go. There's a CD that I did in Brazil a couple years ago called Made in São Paulo, and that's on, you know, CD Baby and downloads, and then that is the previous Netto Band record called Newspaper Girl, that's on download. But this one, I don't know, is maybe I'll stay away a little bit from downloads until I can, but I would like to put it on a physical artwork as a vinyl, you know, so, you know, I don't know. I think there is a lot of people out there right now looking for new music, and that, you know, people are looking for vinyl. There's more of finding something unique, finding something, and that quality and that sound.
And what's different about an album or a CD even versus just a download is that, from what I understand, it's like a book. It's like a complete story,
right.
a compilation of the songs put together to tell a story musically, right?
Yeah, I think
something
so.
More complete.
Yeah, the journey of putting together a whole 10 songs or 9 songs or what, you know, for an album, a record, or a CD is quite of a journey of work and finances and. You know, and so it's nice to have people listen, at least put in their hands the whole thing and listen to it. And instead of, oh, I like this one, I don't like this one. And because when you have the whole thing, I remember back in our days, Barbara, you know, some songs on the record, you say, well, this one, and then 2 weeks later, you love the song and you want to hear it, right?
Right, you change.
Yeah, so you change, and when you're doing downloads and things like that, you don't have that experience, you know. It's quantity more than quality becomes a little bit. So.
And that really shapes a lot of what I'm hearing through your life. You've reduced, I want to say noise, there's probably a better word for it, but you've really kept things in a very rich level, in a deeper level, with whether it's the music, the people you are with, the venues even.
Yeah. And a lot of practice too, you know. I like playing, practicing, you know, and maintaining that quality of you know, music. And
I think we need to hear some more music.
Yeah.
This one is called, this is off your new album,
right?
Other Shore.
Yeah.
And it's called The Vision.
Yeah, that has a little New York flavor to it, and it has the great Claudio Rodici trumpet. He was, you know, he's been in New York. He's one of the masters, bebop, Brazilian trumpet players. It has worked with everybody, Dizzy Gillespie, Paquito de Rivera. And it has also a singer, very young, that I've been doing some work in New Jersey. And the Neto band, Lily, is the singer, Dukesh, and the Neto band, recorded here in Oakland.
Nice. Okay, we'll have a smoother start this time. Yeah. Here we go.
Thank you.
That was beautiful.
Well, thank you. Yeah, something new just wrote. And, you know, just to bring it out, the players for the Natto Band, Frank Martin on piano, Gary Brown on bass, Celso Berti on the drums, all Bay Area guys, and Café da Silva, percussionist. He's in New York.
And this song, The Vision, is off your new album,
new record,
Other Shore.
Other Shore, yes.
Right.
That is going to appear somewhere at some time, sometime, someday.
Oh, that sounds mysterious. That's fun. That is the 50th anniversary of the Summer of Love. I'm feeling that this year has a lot of surprises.
Yeah. I actually played at the, I don't know, it was this, so this is going to be the 50th. So I played at the 48 Summer Love celebration, I think maybe 47, at the Golden Gate Park.
Really?
Yeah, I did a selection of Crosby, Stills, and Nash songs. I had 12 minutes. It was just me and Celso, the drummer. And we played like everything that, you know, Woodstock, and it was great. It was fun. There's something on YouTube about it.
Yeah. Right.
And I guess we got the, I have a gig coming up with Jai Utal,
who was with us last week, and he
great.
Has a new album out as well.
It's great,
Rock Rama.
Great record. I played on the record and arranged, actually, and co-wrote three songs with him. Great musician, really first-class world music. So that will be Friday at the Community Center in Mill Valley.
Sounds like the reemergence of these world musicians are just renaissance.
Yeah, it's really a good moment. I think we need it. We need music. We need arts to kind of make up for all of this craziness that is going on everywhere.
Music brings people together.
Yeah.
And you're off, ready for a tour.
Yeah, we just finished East Coast with Stevie. That was, you know, just over 3 weeks, about 15 shows. And we got another tour of 4 weeks in July. That will be Europe. And then we have West Coast. In September, we're going to be at the Fox Theater and Santa Rosa, the Wells Fargo, or, yeah.
Yeah. And that's all on your website?
Yeah, and the Mountain Winery. Maybe the best would be Steve Winwood's website for that. It's a complete list of... But I'll be there.
Nice.
So, yeah, it's good.
Yeah, and I'll be sure to add those links to
He's releasing a live double CD, triple vinyl, Steve, 1st of September. Live,
wow.
So I'm pretty much there is, I think, 4 or 5 songs that he has with the old Traffic, but I'm pretty much on the record everywhere, so that should be nice.
And we'll look forward to more performances by you and the Natto Band locally.
Yeah,
I hope
I
soon
think
too,
so.
Right?
I think we'll come back in October. I think we'll do another jam.
Nice.
Yes. It's really nice to be here. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Yeah. You've been listening to José Neto, Brazilian guitarist, composer, arranger, writer. Your website is joseneto.com.
Yeah, and the Facebook has a lot of stuff about music, pretty much.
Nice. Thanks so much for joining us here.
My pleasure.
I think we need to end with another song of yours.
Okay.
How about Song for That Day?
That's a new one.
Thanks so much for joining Take
Thank
Back.
Thank you. Nice to be here. I'll see you all at some time.
Nice. Well, thank you for joining us. And we'll be back next week at 12 o'clock with Dan Fontes, who is a muralist. And we'll be talking about giraffes and giraffe conservation. Please join us then. And meanwhile, enjoy Song for That Day by José Neto. All right. See you next week.
stands before an open window.